Chapter 28 Gifts and Givers. We lose nothing by giving. God pays back a scientific giver. Mary Baker Eddy, 1905. A letter to the leader from her editor-in-chief on the last day of October stated in part, quote, I am planning to get into this week's Sentinel, the newspaper account of Judge Ewing's lecture in Concord, and especially Mayor Corning's fine tribute to you and to your work. End quote. In answering his question as to which local newspaper account she preferred, Mrs. Eddy added, One thing I regret, that is to say, the space too fully used in speaking of me, if it were so. The mayor is a noble man. I never met him. But Judge Ewing is the soul of eloquence. But I wish all our lecturers would conform themselves mostly to explain the healing of Christian Science. On November 14th, the leader graciously responded to an invitation from the First Congregational Church in Concord to be present at the observance of their 175th anniversary. Included with her letter of regret, miscellany, page 174, was her check for $500, quote, to aid in repairing your church building, end quote. Another gift given by the leader in November was a beautiful scarf pin, a large lustrous pearl surrounded by diamonds. This note to Mr. Carpenter accompanied the gift. Beloved Gilbert, C.S., please accept this little gift as a symbol of the priceless divine love and my gratitude to you. Mary Baker Eddy, November 9th, 1905. Gilbert was overwhelmed, as his note of thanks reveals. Precious Mother, Mr. Fry has just handed me the beautiful pin and its message of love. It has overwhelmed me to think of your giving to me more after so freely inviting me and all to share with you the pearl of great price, that sacred acquirement of self-sacrifice. I can only say thank you, but I can see in this type your pure selfhood set in a crown of stars, and by wearing this on my heart, keep a watch over the spiritual idea, through which nothing that worketh evil or that maketh a lie can enter. Your child, Gilbert. The recipient of another gift from Mrs. Eddy in 1905 was Calvin C. Hill, who received from the leader a beautiful gold locket set with a solitary diamond. Inside the locket was a lovely, sober picture of the leader. Artists and photographers had a difficult time portraying Mrs. Eddy as she was, because her main quality was spirituality, which was so far beyond their comprehension that its beauty eluded them. Mrs. Stetson also was probably the recipient of a gift from Mrs. Eddy toward the end of 1905, as this letter of November 25th implies. Darling, my darling Augusta, do not name a season dress for me now. I am submerged in work for the field and cannot attend to being fitted now. I am going to send you a little remembrance of me as soon as I can attend to it. An editorial in the Sentinel of November 25th suggested that this Thanksgiving season was an appropriate time for completing the building fund of the Mother Church. Many churches made a special effort to do so, and Mrs. Stetson's letter in this regard was published in the Sentinel in December. December 6th, 1905. My precious leader, I am writing just to tell you of my ever-increasing love for you and of my constant efforts to follow and obey you and your teachings. I am trying to demonstrate Christian Science and praying for grace and love to endure to the end. Our church is most prosperous in truth. The healing is being demonstrated, and many are rejoicing in the health and peace which they find in Science and Health. Grateful and loving disciples call you blessed and thank God. On Thanksgiving Day, we contributed $22,000 to the Mother Church. It has all been paid in, I believe, and will be sent to Mr. Chase. This makes $84,000, which our church has contributed, and we want to make it $100,000 if necessary. We have not more than four men in our large membership who can be called rich. All give all they can and rejoice in the privilege and the sacrifice which test their faith and trust in infinite love. It is joy to give to the cause, and particularly to the dear Mother Vine. I long to do more for you and to be worthy of your dear love. Ever your faithful, obedient child, Augusta E. Stetson. Another letter, which the leader had published, was written on the same day and came from Herbert W. Eustace's church in San Jose, California. The members of this little branch church do not send you the enclosed invitation to the dedication of their church edifice with any anticipation that you can either be present in person or with us in thought, but simply to add, if possible, an iota of joy to gladden your tireless labor in its never-ceasing effort for others by a positive proof that your work has not been in vain, else this edifice would not be. We know that all we have we owe to your faithful love and labor for mankind. We understand that it is not words you require from your followers, so much as works. And this branch has endeavored to live up to this requirement. During the past year, besides completing our own church edifice at a cost including the ground of about $40,000, we have been enabled to forward to the treasurer of the Mother Church over $18,000. This, with what we previously had sent, makes almost $24,000, for which our church holds receipts. We know this will please you, for this branch numbers only 103 members. Our reading room is now selling your glorious work, Science and Health, at the rate of a copy every other day, more than double the sales of last year. The sick are being healed, and the sinful regenerated through the reading and studying of this wonderful book. For this, we are deeply grateful to our Heavenly Father, Divine Love, and our hearts never cease to go out in deepest affection to you, our beloved leader, an affection we are striving to manifest through a more loving obedience. The leader received so many petitions for her largesse that letters of grateful giving and loving obedience, such as Augusta's and this one from San Jose, were a joy to the mother's heart. And her response to the San Jose Church, Miscellany, page 197, was a gift far greater than all the lockets and scarf pins she gave. It helped to sustain Mr. Eustace in later days of trial, and it reinforced his conviction that her, quote, far Western students, the Christian Scientists, end quote, were not deviating from principle, nor erring in interpreting her teaching and instructions. None of this had entered Mr. Eustace's thought at this date, but it may have been in the leader's thought when she wrote, December 13th, 1905. Beloved students, words are inadequate to express my deep appreciation of your labor and success in completing and dedicating your church edifice and of the great hearts and ready hands of our far Western students, the Christian Scientists. Comparing such students with those whose words are but the substitute for works, we learn that the translucent atmosphere of the former must illumine the midnight of the latter, else Christian Science will disappear from among mortals. I thank divine love for the hope set before us in the word and in the doers thereof, quote, for of such is the kingdom of heaven, end quote. Gratefully, lovingly, Mary Baker Eddy. Sue Harper Mims treasured a letter she received from the leader at this time. It was written on November 27th, and one treasured sentence from that epistle reads, quote, that which you impart either impoverishes or enriches being, end quote. A letter of November 29th to McClellan endeavored to resolve some of the controversy in the building of the extension. I think your salary named for Mr. Hill is all right. Perhaps you had better have a less number of picture windows. I think you had, for there are so many in the first building. Please let Mr. Beeman decide this question, as well as all other relative to our church extension. If he had not built it as it is, I would not have decided to have it remain thus, but I like it as he has it now. Mr. S.S. Beeman, an architect from Chicago, was the assistant architect who had been in charge since Architect Brigham had been sent to the Bermudas for his health. But the architects needed more metaphysical support to assure that the temple they were erecting was God's temple. The leader sent this message to one of the workers, Lewis Strang, on December 13th. I have this day asked you by word sent by Mr. Fry to take up for malicious animal magnetism the architects of the First Church of Christ Scientist, Boston. If sinning so-called Christian Scientists would listen to their mother, this work would have been done to the glory of divine mind, and the confusion of those enemies of Christ's truth working within the gates of this cause. When Reverend Mackenzie was here, Mother told him of the need which she felt was so great then, but minds many and earthly cares turn many from his table of love. The New York World asked Mrs. Eddy to contribute to a symposium entitled, quote, The Significance of Christmas, end quote, which was to be published on Sunday, December 10th. Her contribution, Miscellany, page 259, which she dictated to her associate secretary, Gilbert Carpenter, ended with, There is but one Jesus Christ on record. Christ is incorporeal. Neither the you nor the I in the flesh can be or is Christ. An editorial note in the same issue of The World said, Card from Mrs. Mary Baker G. Eddy. No person of prominence in the country has been more sought after for magazine and newspaper articles than Mary Baker G. Eddy, the discoverer and founder of Christian Science. In recent years, she has almost uniformly refused requests of this kind. This year, however, she consented to write an article for the Christmas section of Today's World. A subsequent letter from Mrs. Eddy to the editor of The World possibly explains why she is averse to writing for publication. Her statement is as follows. Nota bene. I hereby certify that counterfeit letters frequently follow my contributions to newspapers, letters representing the opposite of my views, feelings, and nature, the contents of which are so subtle that I expose this lawlessness to save those to whom they are addressed from being misinformed. In, quote, The Significance of Christmas, end quote, Mrs. Eddy said, quote, Mere merrymaking or needless gift-giving is not that in which human capacities find the most appropriate and proper exercise, end quote. There was a good deal more on this point in the next issue of the Sentinel, December 16th, which also reprinted The World's article. The first was, quote, a question, end quote, by Mrs. Eddy, which is titled, quote, Principle or Person, end quote, in Miscellany, page 233. At an earlier date, she had said that telegrams were less time-consuming than were gifts, but now she was overwhelmed with telegrams and had to write, quote, I cannot watch and pray while reading telegrams. They only cloud the clear sky, and they give the appearance of personal worship, which Christian Science annuls. End quote. This question was followed by a bylaw, Duty to God, Manual, page 67. And this notice, dated December 21st, appeared in the next journal. Take notice. Members of our church that have not read the bylaw, quote, Duty to God, end quote, in the issue of our Sentinel of December 16th, 1905, are not amenable for disobeying it until they have read it, but they will be thereafter. Mary Baker G. Eddy. On December 28th, the leader wrote one last 1905 word on Christmas, titled, quote, Christmas for the Children, end quote. Miscellany, page 261, wherein she stated that the, quote, juvenile joy, end quote, provided by the, quote, wisdom of their elders, who seek wisdom of God, end quote, should continue as it is with one exception. The children should not be taught to believe that Santa Claus has aught to do with this pastime. A deceit or falsehood, is never wise. The Board of Education primary class, which was held in December, sent a message to the leader on December 13th. This message and the leader's reply, miscellany, page 254, appeared in the Sentinel of December 23rd. A December 15th letter from the Manchester, England Church saying that they had just sponsored a lecture by Mr. Bignall Young also said, quote, "Your loving gift of Christian Science, made yet more priceless by your selfless labors and constant prayers for all, has welded a bond of union between us in the old country and you in the new, which nothing can sever," end quote. The leader's words of appreciation included, "Neither space nor time can separate genuine Christian Scientists." Quote, "Behold, how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity," end quote. The leader also sent for publication a letter from Electra Scribner in Tombstone, Arizona. Her response to this, quote, "student's student," end quote, stated, "The above letter is redolent with love, and the embroidered bedspread is the most beautiful thing of the kind I ever saw. But more than all else of earth is your joy-inspiring recital of the good being done in your midst by Christian Science and your faithful labors." Some of the students in remote places did better at times than some at Pleasant View. Mrs. Eddy did not explain to those in her household how they failed, but gave them the teaching that would enable them to figure it out for themselves if they made the effort to do so. Mr. Carpenter wrote, "For instance, when she gave me the privilege of carrying her tray to her room at noon and then replaced me at the end of 10 days, it took 25 years for me to come to an understanding of just how I failed her. It was not the food, but the thought back of it, that caused the food to be acceptable to her or not. I am convinced that she hoped I might make the demonstration to put back of that food the thought that would make it acceptable to her, by ruling out all belief in a so-called human mind. This error mind in any student was the enemy of Mrs. Eddy's spirituality, which all of the students were pledged to help her to maintain and sustain." Minnie Wayant was a wonderful cook. She was also devoted to Mrs. Eddy and eager to serve her. But as many another student who said each day that, quote, "all is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation," end quote, she had not accepted that fact as present reality. To Minnie, the food she cooked each day was matter. And sometimes this belief of materiality overpowered the food. At such times, the leader returned the meal untouched, which was very distressing to Minnie. She began preparing a complete second meal, which she called the, quote, "in case," end quote, dinner. In case Mrs. Eddy refused the first meal, Minnie had another to send up. No doubt it was Minnie's concern and love that often caused the leader to eat the, quote, "in case," end quote, meal. Minnie's work would have been considerably lessened if she could have turned to mind for the cooking. The leader tried to open blind eyes in this regard with instructions such as this one to Louis Strang. Quote, "Treat Minnie daily for spoiling the simple food she cooks for me." End quote. At the end of 1905, Minnie was feeling exhausted and ill from much work, and the leader wrote to her, December 31st, 1905. "My dear Minnie, you have been a long time at work without a vacation, and now you can have one and get well and rested. True, you do not need this, for God, divine mind, rests you and heals you. Matter cannot do this, and the scripture bids us to come to Christ, truth, and find rest in these words of Christ. Quote, "Come unto me, all ye that are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." End quote. Working for the good of others is not hard work. It is a burden that is light. You have worked for me to help me many years, and it has not hurt you, for it cannot. Doing good helps us all. It has carried my life on 40 years, and it will sustain yours. Do not feel you must come back to work till you believe you are rested and able to do so. With love, M. B. G. Eddy. Do not think of me. Keep your mind fixed on God. Take no thought about my food. It only wastes thought to dwell on matter. The last sentence was the key to Minnie's problem, if she could only have seen it. The leader had sent many inspiring, elevating, loving messages to the field and to the world this December, and malpractitioners were sending to her the suggestion that she would not live to see the new year. New Year's Eve was very discordant for her because of this mental suggestion, and Calvin Fry wrote in his diary, "I took a strong stand that she would live to see 1906 and declared I would sit up and watch and work until the new year comes in and defeat the purpose of malicious animal magnetism. By 10:45 p.m., the enemy had been routed, and Mrs. Eddy told Calvin to drop the work and retire. Calvin Fry, too, was a giver. He gave his whole life to helping his leader in her great labor of establishing Christian Science upon this planet. Are we as faithful in helping, protecting, and defending our leader today as Calvin was in 1905?